Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Diana Michemenye. I'm from Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Good morning to the Chair and to the Members. Michael Pope from Independent Newspapers.
Honourable Members, the programme of today is as follows. Number one is the briefing on road accident benefit scheme by the department. Number two is a consideration and adoption of the minutes of the 21st. Number three, the same with the report of Free State. Remember last time, members felt very strong that we must put more flesh on it. And then the following is the consideration and the adoption of the strat plan. Also, the members in the past suggested that we must put more flesh. And that's it for the day. Without wasting any time, I wanted to comment with something that department, you are more than welcome. We were not even thirsty for this. Some people will use in brackets, we were dry for this opportunity. Because as you know very well, that we are from different provinces and also we are servicing constituency offices as well. We need this information so that we can disseminate the information to help our people on the ground about any information which is from this sector. My name is Pat Sibande. I'm the chairperson of this committee. Originally, I'm from Mpumalanga. I'm representing Mpumalanga. But as you know very well, that this is a team. The committee, we call it a team. We call it Bafana Bafana because we represent all the provinces of South Africa, as well from different political parties, but here we work as a team. Without wasting any time, I'll give the opportunity to the department to start giving us what they've got.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Members. It's indeed a privilege for us to be here today. And when you've read the diagnostic document of the Strategic Planning Commission, it became clear that there's a sensitivity to transform to the extent that you get tired of policy changes. In this particular instance, I think the hunger that this committee is feeling is a hunger that national and maybe the whole of the country at large has been feeling to actually change the dispensation that is really not to the benefit of the larger community into something that can be more streamlined and also more prosperous in the handling of road traffic benefit problems in the country. What I would like to start off with is just to inform the NCOP that we had a draft research policy document that went out, and I will also expand that later on the presentation. But in that policy document that went out for comment, that was in 2009. We also included the NCOP, and I think we had on the 9th or somewhere in September 2010, we had a meeting with the NCOP just briefing them on the broader outlines of that particular policy. This is the policy, the one that we will be presenting today, is the final outcome, the one that got approved by Cabinet end of last year, and which will be continuing for discussion in the sense that draft legislation will be presented to the NCOP as soon as possible this year. when we look at the contents of this particular policy, you will notice, first of all, that we are talking about the Road Accident Benefit Scheme policy. We have used the terminology of the no-fault policy in the past, basically indicating the change from the previous insurance dispensation to a more social security dispensation. However, the intention to emphasize the fact that we are talking about a benefit scheme within the more national social security agenda became very apparent, and for that the name change should be noted by the committee. Just to start from scratch, the Road Accident Fund, not being any stranger to any government institution, the object of the fund still to be the payment of compensation in accordance with the Road Accident Fund Act for any loss or damage wrongfully caused by the driving of motor vehicles. When we look at this particular mandate, I believe it may be quite important to stipulate at this particular point that the Road Accident Fund does not deal with road traffic management. It does not deal with any criminal investigations relating to road accidents. It does not deal with any road-related matters other than payment of compensation. So, having said that, it is quite important to acknowledge that the problems and the risks relating to the RAX mandate are quite comprehensive, but they cannot be dealt with in isolation through the RAF Act or any changes to the dispensation the RAF is meant to manage. So just by way of cautioning the committee that the mandate itself is separated in transport from the other entities dealing with related issues. When we look at the mandate, as we have that in the slide called the background, that particular mandate was the problem over the years. Because that mandate came from a dispensation in the 1940s where people got into a vehicle on the road, they got into an accident, and the common law of this country, and of any country basically, says that if someone harms you, you can claim the damages from that person. That is the common law. So nothing different with regard to road accidents. When you got into a road accident in the 1940s, you could claim your damages from the person that was actually guilty. Problem was that the person who was guilty and the cause of the accident could not afford to pay you your damages. As a result, the government took over that responsibility and said, well, I will use government funds to pay you. And that is where the inequity of the whole dispensation started. Because in effect, if you would provide the funding for this entity through government funds, the implication is that we all contribute equally, irrespective of your wealth and standing in the community, your education, and so forth. But when it comes to the point of payment, if you can prove that you earn a higher income, that you are more important, that your children will be the next engineer or doctor in the country, then you could claim more. And in time, as income grew and the actual income of the fiscus got less, the difficulty with meeting the financial obligations started, resulting in a big deficit and basically a bankrupt entity for more than three decades. Now, having said that, over the years, and maybe I'm jumping the gun, but I think the background is quite important to highlight here. Over the years, many interventions were sought to correct the financial problem within the Road Accident Fund because they could not make ends meet. They could not pay these inflated claims and quite a number of claims as well. And as a result, because you could not get enough funding from the fiscus, you had to keep balancing this mandate with a lesser income. In the commissions that we will look into a little later on, they advised on changing the system. And that is the root cause and the backbone of the policy. Not to look into providing vehicle owners and drivers on the road with an insurance to cover them when they're in an accident. We want to move away from that. We want to get into a situation where the point of departure is one of social integration, one of social cohesion, and one of an accountability across the country, not for the pockets of either the claimants or the service providers, but the actual victim. And the only way to do that is to divert into the social integrated system where you take responsibility to have your citizens and your drivers of this country being taken care of from a medical point of view, from an income point of view, and try to integrate them back into society. So having said that, the funding, the levy on fuel sold, 88 cents per litre, that is something that is determined not by us as transport, of course, but as you all know, the levy on fuel is determined by Treasury from time to time, and not the whole fuel levy goes to the RAF. A very small portion does. So when you have this tax incentive, they take quite a number of routes when they deduct from the fuel levy earned to be taken over to the road accident fund. There's certain administrative issues of transferring money that is a little technical, maybe not for purposes of today's discussion. Bottom line is that is the only income. It's a Schedule 3A entity, meaning that they cannot even borrow money. All three A entities, they can't borrow money. They can just take what they get from the government and then they must walk. They can to a very limited extent invest money. And especially if you're not solvent, you need to have specific, clear approval from Treasury in order to proceed with that. If we go to the existing liability, so what do you get if you claim from the RAF today? To get into an accident and you have proven that you are not at fault, in other words, you went through the whole court system and either you've got an agreement with the RAF on the guilt, or you got a verdict from the court stating that you were not at fault, then you can claim the following. You can claim past and future hospital, medical, and related expenses. Now, for purposes of that, we have agreed tariffs with the medical service providers, the whole medical profession, and those claims will be paid. But important here, no claims not approved by the court as actual damages that need to be paid will be paid. So it's not something that is an automatic kind of medical treatment. Funeral expenses, if you can prove that it's actually necessary, you can claim that. Past and future loss of support, if you a beneficiary of someone that was deceased in due to a motor vehicle accident, you can claim past and future loss of support. Similar past and future loss of earnings, if you've been disabled due to a motor vehicle accident, you can claim that. Also capped. In other words, the capping is presently 197,000 per annum. So if you earn more than 197 within the existing dispensation, you will fall into that category that cannot claim more than that. Also, there's certain tax laws that prevent, and insurance laws that prevent you from claiming more than 75% of your actual salary or earnings. General damages that you can claim: pain and suffering, loss of amenities of life, disfigurement, etc. The so-called sorry money. Now, when you talk about general damages, people sometimes confuse it with actual damages. Actual damages you can provide an invoice for. You can provide a receipt of some service that is delivered to you by a doctor, a hospital, or in any other way. General damages will include something totally different. You will lose a pinky in an accident. Your general damages will be those damages that you claim that are your the actual loss of life. You can't stipulate exactly how much will be that you will take. Because I don't have one of my fingers anymore, this will cost me $500,000 in sorry money. So that is what you can claim presently, but only relating to serious injuries. So that is one of the cappings that has been introduced. Within the existing system as well, we do not pay by month or even 6 months or yearly. You pay one amount, a lump sum. And that is where it gets inflated. And that is why it also gets to be delayed, to the extent that a court of law must first decide what the actual damages will amount to, including both your income, all your medical expenses, all your general damages. And they will put it all into one basket, not including your attorney fees, just your actual damages. And then they will decide on that particular amount, and that is what you will get from the RAF. So what is wrong with this existing system? Because you need to first get clarity on this exact amount of damages, and because you need to have clarity on the other person's fault in the accident, the whole process gets delayed. Your treatment, however, medically wise now, cannot get delayed. So what happens in practice is that a person will need to go to a hospital, see a doctor, have follow-up, but he will have to pay from his own account. If he's fortunate, he has a medical aid, then at least he will get by for a certain period. But in general, this is quite a trying period for most victims. And it can take, in some instances, up to 8 years to get finality from the court on those two issues. And as a result, by the time that you get your money, you had to pay from your own pocket or with the help and assistance of friends and family. You need to pay them back. You had to live. You need to pay your attorney. You need to pay your advocate. And then we're not even talking about the other social insecurities that it would have provided if you could not get integrated back into your workplace. So those are one of the biggest challenges that we are sitting with. The complexity of the whole process. You need to go through a legal system of proving your case. And although you can educate your general public on the principles involved in that process, you will have, even in the highest intellectual fields of community members, that will be unsure. But how does it work? Why is this thing getting delayed? And there's uncertainty why some cases are getting finalized prior to others. And although you can on a technical level describe it and explain it to people, it's not solving the problem. It seems like an equitable way of dealing with it. The inequities that I've referred to, those are quite evident. The inequities, however, presently are not within the fault system itself. The inequities now lie with the application of the system. And I think that is something that we can discuss later on as well. Affordability is still an issue. However, on the affordability, I need to mention something. Over the years, since Sasswell, even before Sasswell and Taylor, It was always said that if we could introduce no fault, it will solve the financial situation of the RAF. And through the actuarial analyses that we've conducted over the last couple of years, it became quite clear that that will not be the case. In fact, it will be a little bit more expensive. Not that much, but it may be a little bit more expensive, because just in a normal thought paradigm, if you must pay and provide benefits to everyone in an accident, eventually you will have to pay more than when you would only pay the guilty party in income or benefits. Now, what is the difference? The difference is that presently the money is going to the wrong place. The money is going in the whole administration of the existing system. It is quite frankly going largely to the lawyers, who must be so much involved in this whole process of proving your case, determining damages, etc. Even related legal assistance that you need, because you need to have witnesses, you need to have this and that. You know, it's really a complicated process. It costs money. And it's not only the victim's attorneys that must be paid. It's also the RAF that must pay their attorneys. So at the end of the day, the money, which is public money, is not going to the victim to the extent that it should be going there. So this system will form part of the more integrated health and social service delivery program of the government, in the sense that the money will then be going directly to your medical service providers, your hospitals, trying to beef up the system of medical care in the country to be able to deliver on the health mandate. That's the one thing. And the second one, of course, is that it will go directly to the claimant. And the fact that you will not go into this very extensive administrative process will also ensure proper savings and speed up the whole process of finalization of the claim. The existing abuse of the system, we abuse may be a very strong word to use in the public domain, but unfortunately, when you have a system that has this incentive that if you can prove yourself as maimed as possible and as disabled as possible, you will get a lot of money, it may lead to abuse of the system. And not only by the victims, but by the lawyers and all the other service providers that are involved. We would like to prevent that. The new system, and I think that this goes with more or less all new processes that we establish, can also lead to abuse. No system is free of abuse. It all depends on how many internal controls will you put in to ensure that you manage your risk. But I think that is quite evident. Just focusing a little bit on the RAF Amendment Act of 2005. It got implemented on August 2008. Now, that was the fundamental interim solution to take care of the financial difficulties that the RAF experienced up till that point. Namely, that until that very day of 1 August 2008, the RAF was still the entity that paid you. The RAF was still the entity that paid you whatever your damages were until 1 August 2008. And that is why you heard about these half a billion claims and people from overseas coming here and then they have one accident and then they claim that much. That was the dispensation. Now, we might have heard about it after 1 August 2008 because that is only when it got settled. You can't implement an act retrospectively. So only the claims from 1 August 2008 have been dealt with in accordance with this amended status quo situation where we have introduced the capping. Like it is now, you cannot claim for an income or support more than 160,000. There's the typo, it's saying 16,000 and it's actually 160,000. That was what the Act said at the time. And of course, with inflation, the existing rate here is 194,000 per year at 31 January 2012. So if you're earning more than that, you will not be able to claim more than that, irrespective of your income. This is the status quo. The general damages, the one that I've reverted to earlier, you can claim that still, but only for serious injuries. Then also in the 2005 Act, we had a particular challenge with regard to passenger discrimination, which we've removed in this Act. You will recall that in the old Act, the very fast one, if you would have been a passenger, you could only claim 20,000. Okay, so whether you were at fault or not, you could only claim 20,000. Now that we've corrected in the Amendment Act of 2005, so that you can claim exactly like any other person, as long as you're not at fault. That's the only principle. In the 2005 Act, however, we also removed the common law claim. And this is quite important because we've continued with this principle in the new policy. The common law claim basically is stating that if you now only claim 194, but you're actually earning 2 million, so your actual damages are more. So what now? Can I claim it from the guilty party? If you do that, you would have based that claim in a court of law on what they call the common law. A common law claim. And in this Amendment Act of 2005, we've removed that right to claim the rest of the money from the actual guilty person. So in fact, we've removed the common law claim. And we got quite seriously challenged in the Constitutional Court on this matter, and the Constitutional Court came out with his decision end of last year as well to say that it is constitutional to remove the common law claim. And so with that constitutional judgment in our favour, we felt comfortable to carry it on. The important thing here to note is why. Why do we do this? First of all, 96% of the people in this country earn less than 194,000. So if you are in that 4% of this country's income earners group earning more than 194,000, you will be perceived as being part of the rich. And the government is not prepared to sponsor the rich. So that is why that particular target of 194,000 is determining the cut-off point. If you are going to claim the rest of the money, the implication will be that you as a citizen will be at risk when you go onto the road, even if you're at fault, that you can be the one that can get into an accident with some very rich person, and that person will then claim from you the rest of the damages. So to some extent, this is protection for what we would perceive as the poor segment of the country, to ensure that they will not be burdened with additional financial risk. That is something that can still be debated, but that is the policy view, and that is how we will proceed from here on. The policy change, it started off with a white paper in 1995. The Road Accident Fund Commission, that is the Statutory Commission from 1999 to 2002. The Taylor Committee on Comprehensive Social Security in 2002, also the one on which the social development policy on social integrated social security has been based. And then the RASC, the Road Accident Fund Commission, proposals got accepted in principle in 2003 by Cabinet, and even a strategy document on the restructuring of the RAS as part of the Comprehensive Social Security Scheme policy 2006, and still nothing happened. So now we have the policy, and I think we are moving forward to get it implemented as fast as possible. Just to have the strategic imperative quite clear, the intention is to restructure the current fault-based motor vehicle accident compensation system as operated by the RAF to a no-fault system of benefits operated by the Road Accident Benefit Scheme Administrator, we call it RAPSA, as part of the CSSA. Now, it's a lot of big words. In fact, the most important one for us to communicate to stakeholders is the fact that when you get into an accident, you need not have to prove whether you're at fault or not at fault in that particular accident. You don't need to indicate your degree of fault. If you would have been negligent, 1%, and you must first prove that. That is quite a difficult one. This policy is stating no fault needs to be determined. You will go directly to a hospital. You will receive emergency care immediately. You will receive follow-up care. You will not pay for it. The RAF will have an understanding with the service providers that they will settle the account directly. You will receive the services. So if the incentive is to get money from the RAF because you need to pay your doctor, it's not going to work because there will not be money going through your victim to the doctor or to the hospital. The arrangement will be between the RAPSA, which is the new entity, will be between RAPSA and the medical service provider, and you will get your medical services immediately. All right, then the coverage as such, we will be covering all categories of road users for injury or death. This is a very difficult policy decision, and the reason why it became quite complicated is that when you try to broaden the net of people that should benefit from this particular policy, the argument comes in that Social Security is immediately applicable to everyone. And if the accident would have been on a car, between a car and a passenger, car and a pedestrian, it's quite clear because there's a motor vehicle involved. If the accident would be, say, on a kind of a vehicle, say, for instance, in the rural areas, you will have more non-motorized transport. And if you would have been in an accident there, it may not be applicable. The Act may not be applicable. It's not permanently applicable. So then those kinds of policy challenges come up. And the reason why we need to allow those kinds of discussions, and when we bring the bill, I think we need to again discuss that. It's important because Social Security is not insured. That I'm keep coming back to that. When this committee will eventually have the integrated Social Security policy and the bill that will give effect to that, then it will be applicable to all. Then it will not matter whether it's a road accident or you just fell off your ladder, because it will be applicable to everyone, and there will be one set of rules to cover all those damages and how you translate that into compensation. But because we're not yet there, and because you can't expect the RAF to stand in for all the Social Security compensation claims, we need to limit it to make sense for purposes of how it's getting its funding, which is the fuel. So, just to explain that. All right, access to medical care in South Africa, that is the main one. As I indicated, we will not have cash payments so that you can go and pay for your medical care, but there will be a payment of your medical care provider. We will recognize earners and non-earners. There will be no discrimination between whether you're earning an income and whether you are an infant or you're underage or you're not working. If you're unemployed, keeping in mind that unemployment now at 25% in this country, most people are still utilizing our roads. They are still paying their sewer levy, whether directly or indirectly. So to exclude them will just perpetuate the inequality of the cost. So you need to have a proper, non-discriminatory way to recognize the facilitation of payment of both earners and non-earners. But we can't pay everything, all your damages, so we will continue with thresholds and ceilings and cappings, and it will be based on proper actuarial analyses to what the state can afford and what would be reasonable in the particular dispensation. We will include defined rules within the process. The one specifically indicated in the policy is that there would be a waiting period of 2 months. So that you put in your claims, there will be a process of just checking everything so that you can rule out any abuse and so forth, and then payment will happen, and that payment will be then to the claimant and the service providers equally. And then the very important one, we will not have lump sum payments anymore. This thing of getting half a million from the RAF, it's not going to happen anymore. You will receive periodic payments. Because remember, your medical bills will now be paid. You don't need to worry about that. Your funeral benefits, you see the last one there, the flat rate funeral benefit, that's a once-off, you will get it, done with. When you need to get an income, that is the place where in the past we had the star, glass ball gazing thing, crystal ball gazing, that's what they called it. To say, well, in 25 years, I might have progressed that far in my career. So I would like to request this lump sum of money. Quite difficult to determine. Again, complicated legal process. Actuaries coming in, a lot of witnesses, etc. So what we are saying now is, no, you need to still be not able to work. We would like to get you back into the workplace. We want to integrate you back into society. So we want to give you all the medical care that you need, all the rehabilitation that you need, so that we can facilitate you getting back into society. Whatever that will cost, that is what we invest as a collective in the country. And that is the cross-cutting accountability that we would like to support. But as a result, you need to prove your income as a final tax. And that income will, of course, be under investigation from time to time, inflation, etc. And you will be paid, say, a monthly payment every month to cover that income loss that you are experiencing. In the same breath, the RAFSA will have the right to investigate from time to time and according to set rules, etc., to be developed, if you're still not capable, or whether you're abusing the system. Because, and I think the NCRP has been voicing that quite a number of times, we do not want to have a dependency investment of our resources. What we want is to have an active human resource development, to have our economic growth emphasized with our social security as a support. So when we try to balance those two, what we need is to have someone taking responsibility for his or her health with the support of the state to get him back into economic activity. If you're 100% disabled, of course they will always be, and I think that's also important to note. It's not as if you cannot agree with any claimant to have a lump sum permanent disability. There will always be room for that kind of negotiation, but that's not the point of departure. When it's quite clear that someone is disabled for life, it's going to be senseless to have a monthly payment. Then you can do it. But that is the exception. If we move to the policy proposal in particular, entitlements for your actual payment will be linked to review and participation in rehabilitation and vocational programs to encourage return to work. In other words, and this is also important, when we try to look at the beefing up of our health system in the country, and we look into job creation and the sustainable health program, one thing that we do need is to encourage your non-formal health services, whether that be your physiotherapist, whether that be more natural health medicine, etc. It's quite a wide program of assistance in the country, and it needs to be modified to suit the needs of the different provinces, whether urban and rural. But apart from being a job creation incentive, it's quite important that it can relate to getting the particular victim back into the workplace. Deductions for collateral benefits received from other state-funded social security schemes, UIF, QEDA, disability grants from SASA, you cannot double them. That's basically it. If the government pays for your disability, the intention is that it pays once. That is the policy perspective, and that is how it will proceed from here. And it's also quite interesting to note that on a wider scale, the social wage of the country presently accounts to one quarter of the actual expenditure of government. So this will form part of it. It will add to that, because it will widen the net of social inclusion. Funding assets available to pay claims when liability arises. Now, the difficulty with a sustainable financial continuity in the entity is that your mandates and your funding must balance. Now, in the past, because of these long delays and the fact that you need to anticipate what your actual expenditure would have been if all claims would have come through today, the RAF could not manage. That's basically it. So what we are saying now is we need a fully funded entity. The income must be able to be adequate to pay the claim. That is the difference. And when we deal with a 42 billion rand deficit of the Road Accident Fund, the intention is that the past deficit should not blur the future of a new entity which is supposed to be based on equitable principles. Because the past deficit is a result of the inequitable system of the past. So if you burden the new entity with that, you're basically saying that we, in the current dispensation, will have to pay for the past discrimination. That's basically what you will say. And then the RAFs will never come from the ground. You will still be having an entity that's insolvent for another 20, 30 years, although you will pay it off. And that's not what we want. We want a ring fencing of the past deficit by the fiscus to deal with that as and when it needs to be paid. Implication basically is that if you have a claim now in the system, you are within the RAF system, the fourth system. It needs to be dealt with. And the fiscus must, whenever that claim is finalized, must provide the money to pay it. It must be ring fenced. It must not cloud the financial sustainability of the new entity, which is starting on a total new dispensation, where you need to balance your mandate and your income going forward. When we earmark funds, now, the very first day when I briefed, I think that was the grace of Parliament, when we first introduced the draft NOFOT policy 2 years ago. The question was asked whether or not this RAPSA policy and the RAPSA entity that we want to establish will fund national health insurance. And my answer to that was yes, because to some extent it is. But we must be clear on what we are saying. We're not going to give NHI money. What we are giving is we are providing money into the health service component of the country. and we're providing guidance to what kind of health services are needed, because we have a proper system of statistics to show, well, we have so many accidents relating to neck injuries and this, that, and we need more physiotherapists. So you do incentivize to some extent your health sector, but you will always also pump a lot of money into your public health sector, because that is where predominantly we need a lot of infrastructure development and support, maintenance, etc. We will deliver care against minimum standards. And like many other processes in government, the moment you integrate, say in this case a transport process with a health process, and it also links up with a justice and a social development process, you need to be sensitive to the expertise within those other spheres of government. Same with the national and provincial. So when we set minimum standards, for instance, the kind of cooperation that you need to have with your health department will be critical. And those standards will be applied across the board, and it will also support other health incentives where they try to set standards presently. The quality monitoring, presently the policy expects the RAPSA to monitor the actual health services that you get, which is tricky because you do not have the direct influence into the particular hospital over the particular health service provider. But that is something that you can regulate, and you can monitor that, and you can create processes to even provide penalties if poor quality has been provided. We need a proper statistical database. We need to have proper reports and research done on the kind of injuries, records of car accidents, and I'm not talking RCMC now, I'm talking about the actual accidents, the nature of the accidents. And so that we can build that database and have informed decisions going forward, both on planning for the increase in fuel levy and also other developments. The alignment to the NHI has been doubtful. All right, just the scorecard itself. We published the policy for comments on 12 February 2010. It was revised. It was approved by Cabinet. We published it for public information in November last year. The legislative drafting has already commenced, and we've included it into the transport legislative program for 2012. So I do hope to not only present it here at the NCOP and the Service Delivery Committee, but also if the members would welcome that within the provinces, I would love to present the actual bill for discussion in the provinces at the different portfolio committees there. I think having come this far in this process, the one thing that we do not want is that this piece of legislation, the whole process, the policy change, is not successful. This is the one thing that can be a success, and we have one opportunity to do it right. So the point of departure for the department is to have as extensive consultations as possible, not only with governments and the communities, but also with the stakeholders. If we must sit with the lawyers, we sit with them. If we must sit with Medlab, we sit with them. If we must sit with Consulta, we sit with them. It's quite important that as far as possible that you could be sensitized already now when you drop the first piece of legislation on any particular problem that may arise, because it's new. There is no precedent that we can say it's been done there, this would have happened. What we have is stakeholders that know the business, they know the communities, they know the difficulties, and we have this opportunity to put it right. Those are the stakeholder consultations, quite comprehensive. I think it went even broader than that, but those were the legislative expectations. Just for summarizing maybe the most important ones, staggered from 1946, as I've indicated, the first RAF Act, how it was established, and how the fund took over the common law responsibility to pay for damages caused by guilty parties. Then the problems developing, the unlimited claims, no balance between mandate and income, no relation to the social agenda. The interventions, the white paper, all those commissions, strategic documents, and now the policy. This slide maybe find its way near to the end of the presentation. But this is actually the most important one of all. Because for us, introducing a policy change, it long surpassed the intention of solving the financial crisis in the RAF. The 42 billion rand deficit is something government must deal with. The important thing is, we need to correct the underlying problem. And that is what we are focusing on. We are trying to have a long-term vision. We are having a commitment of the leaders in the country, throughout government, throughout the private sector, and also the community at large. We want to address the poverty challenges here. We want to have a long-term sustainable social inclusion. The social compact that we are trying to achieve within our solidarity program cannot be successful if we do not have economic viability. So to emphasize this within the development path and the national growth path that we've now introduced, if we cannot align it with that, it's not going to happen. We are having a very strong focus in transport on infrastructure development, mainly, and positioning the country with regard to infrastructure. Human infrastructure and the maintaining of that within the broader agenda is just as important. The legislative inventions that I've mentioned, just for the clarity of the committee, something that one can just put together in a box. How the problem still persisted within the fault system and in the governmental interventions. The social mandate, I think we touched on all of that, being part of the social security benefit system, no need to litigate to prove the guilt, common law claims still abolished. 82.6 cents per litre in fuel levy, that is the actuarial analysis until the end of the 2012 financial year. It's a little bit difficult to have a final determination. I think by the time that we conclude our bill and the business plan for RAPSA, the exact amount will be clearer. But that is basically what the research showed us. Fully funded, and the deficit of RAF to be ring-fenced by the fiscus. The replacement benefit, this is just to indicate to the committee the exact differentiation of the benefits. An income benefit, cap to 190,000. Paying off all medical costs, tariffs will determine the amount. A family support benefit as a third one, also with thresholds and ceilings. And a certain formula to determine that. Costly, a flat rate funeral benefit of 10,000. Then important to note, no general damages. Not if it's a serious injury or anything. You will not get sorry money. Because I do not have a pinky anymore, we will pay your medical cost, we will pay your lack of salary. You will not get $500,000 or 10,000 because it's so difficult to live. That's basically no general damages, irrespective of what. No pain and suffering claim. Common law, still abolished. Can't claim the rest of the money from the actual guilty party. There will be periodic investigations. A very strong focus on fraud and any other risks in the process. Then importantly, it will only be provided in South Africa. So if you travel overseas, and you have an accident there, you cannot come back yet from that. No double dipping. And just to make maybe a differentiation, you remember the previously published draft consulted policy document, the thick one, we made some changes, quite obviously. We explained the six major ones. The fact that in that draft Milford policy, we had a hybrid, because we have so many exceptions. You know, and the moment you start dealing with exceptions, you fall back into the past, and you need to go and prove it again. And the moment you say, well, we are not dealing with a criminal element. It may be criminal, you may be negligent. That's why we have a justice system. We must ensure that they do their job. But that should not prevent you from getting your treat, getting back and into delivering on your mandate. So we diverted to a pure no fault. We have Australia as one of the countries that is operating on a hybrid. Extremely complex. Extremely expensive. And even for a first world country, they're struggling. So why go that route? We have a simple system. It's going to work. It's contributing to the mandate. The important one there, the capitation model. Now, capitation basically is also promoted within the NHI. Intention of capitation is to have an approved set of medical service providers, which you pay a certain amount per month, and they will provide the services irrespective of what it may be, because they get this constant income source. Difficulty presently is that in the managed healthcare sector, they do not have the data, resources, and capacity to determine a proper amount to provide to, say, for instance, transport. And if you're going to just give them money and they do not have a planned way how to spend it, and you do not have the control over how they're spent, it's going to be very difficult. So in our discussions with health, the intention is that they are going to drive that process of getting it in order. That is why capitation is very important for NHI. We are going to do capitation as soon as possible. Until we have that in place, we will do fee control. So just as presently, the reasonable fee within the set tariffs will be paid by us. And then just the way forward, we are presently in 2012, the drafting of the business plan is in process to ensure a smooth transition from RAF to RAPSA, and of course we are in the final stages of the drafting of the bill that will go through the normal parliamentary legislative process, hopefully, and I think the third term of 2012 may be a little bit optimistic, but let's try to see if we can't finalise that process by, say, the end of the calendar year, so that we can ensure, even if it's just in a phased approach, that we can start implementing the system as soon as possible after 2020. Chairperson, honourable members, I would like to thank you for the invitation, and I would like to request the committee to take note of this policy, and I would like to thank you for the interest and your support in this whole process. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, ma'am, about this marvelous input, hoping that it will assist us there and there. But nevertheless, now I'll be giving this opportunity to the members to start maybe to ask for clarities or whatever. But I'll start myself by one. I'll come later with some questions. You know, ma'am, previously, early 2002, I can say, there was a committee which was created, which is a sexual committee, to review whatever. That's where it was exposed that it is alleged that even foreign people are taking an advantage due to poor financial management. And then that's why they were even fabricating road accidents so that they claim very high. For an example, they were claiming in dollars, some in pounds, because pounds and dollars are higher than a rent. maybe also to link this on with your input, you said somewhere access to medical care in South Africa, not in cash. How do you deal with that condition in regard? Because people from foreign people, they can be involved in the accident and decide to be treated abroad, not in South Africa. And in the past, there were, I mean, a lot of loopholes whereby they were involving the poor financial management to an extent. Who is this guy? To an extent, there were people who were being fired by Rotex and Fund, like a chairperson Willie Huma and the chief executive Humphrey Khomongwe were suspended for allegation of maladministration of these financial systems. Maybe if you can elaborate more, that how is the situation at the moment in terms of monitoring your systems? Because another problem was that your systems, that's why other people had an advantage, because they were not talking to each other. It was very weak within the institution itself. And then I'll come with other questions. Let me give it to the members. Allow me to start from here, going that way. I'll start from here. Honourable Member Kronemann.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Actually, you touch on exactly what I'm willing to ask, and that is the methods you are going to use from now on to stop these abusing of the system and the fraud that was taking place in the past. What methods are you have now from now on in place? Further on, I just also want to thank you for the explanation about the whole, I think you've done it very well. Thank you, Jane.
Next. Honourable Member, Mama. Okay, fine. Honourable Member Mlenzana. Followed by who? Honourable Member Felsman. Followed by Honourable Member Jacobs. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also take this opportunity to actually appreciate the presentation. As you said before, we have been longing to get this briefing from Araya. It's a pity, Chairperson, as the presentation was being made, I was busy grappling with the papers, trying to put my mind together, and I couldn't get your definitions, but will assist me with a definition of a funeral. This chapter may seem a very, very awkward question, but for me, coming from that province of the Eastern Cape, in Mount Frere, where you know that day in, day out, there would be accidents and a long queue of people applying for such. And I told that the funeral benefit is 10,000. And for us, what do you mean by a funeral? Is it actually taking the body into the ground? That is getting a coffin, getting the undertaker with the strings to put the coffin down, and then that's a funeral, excluding what the mourners and what have you would then be eating and all, which in terms of our tradition takes the bigger chunk of money besides the actual putting the body under the ground. The other one, Chairperson, is on delayed payments. I see that when you are looking at correcting, sure thing, it has been up to 8 years. but now the waiting period is about 2 years.
Are you not saying?
So 2 months or 2 years? 2 months. Now, what happens during this process? Because we know that this is a wish, but the practicality of things, do not actually, you know, result in what we so wished in terms of the administration now putting together things. It's either the beneficiaries would submit wrong information or information which is not, full and all that, and there would be that movement. But now my question, Chairperson, is what happens during that period? Is there no way, I'm asking this question now, Chair, from a political point of view, you know that ultimately you are going to give this person something. Is there no way of saying, while we are moving to and fro with the processes, but there is some kind of an advance? Because sometimes you find a family which, in development terms, would be trapped into poverty such that the basic reason for even the submission or delayed submission or submission of wrong information is as a result of the same poverty trap, that she finds it very difficult to foot all the way 30 k's to town just to link up with the funeral undertaker, who would sometimes be told that, look man, the cat is not in, come tomorrow. And it would mean then go back home, budget another 2 days before you come back. So I'm saying, can't you have an advance to look into that? Chair, on the abuse of systems, I feel that there is a gap in this policy, Chairperson. I'm raising this because I have thought, Chair, when we are at the scorecard, I had thought that there would be a way of integrating. Find time, Chair, as the rough now changed to this new one, which I will find time to grapple and understand. So bear with me when I'm still saying rough for now. Find time wherein you bring together all the stakeholders who ultimately give product to the payment. Because you may try perfection only as yourself, only to find that the thing starts at the police station. Chair, I have a practical example where I was called by, I'm not sure whether she is a lawyer or what, but a consultant, telling me of my accident, which I reported in a particular police station in KZN, giving me the time, giving me everything, and telling me my injury. You know? Saying, I know you had backache, which is true, and you went to this particular hospital, and but you did not claim. He says, come, let me assist. I find the documentation down the line. He says, look, man, you are not alone in that. I said, no, I was alone. He says, no. In the form, we have included 4 other passengers, blah, 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 blah. And when I said, now, okay, come, let's discuss. Unfortunately, there was a statement made in the media. I don't know what is it that we were discussing. And this guy saw me in parliament. And that's when he ran away. because I wanted him closer now, because I was at the stage of getting up to his office where he actually works. Now, he ran away, he changed contact details and all. Now, I can no longer get hold of him, because I wanted to, when I report this, I have, you know, detailed information. Lastly, Chair, on the ring fencing of the deficit, I agree with it, but I think, Chair, it needs clarity. As you ring fence the deficit, there is budget for implementation going forward. Your implementation period is 2014. We are now getting into the 2012-13 financial year. What are you doing? When are you starting to ring fence? Because I would imagine that you ring fence the site and you do the normal work as planned this other side. So how do you do it? Or put the other way around, do you still see this deficit which is ring fenced still existing, particularly, I'm more interested, Chair, now, on your implementation date of 2014. How would you work such that at least even if now you do both parts, come 2014, you are sure that there is no more deficit? Thanks, Chairperson.
Before I give it to Mr. Felsman to make a rider, you know, it's very, very disturbing. It happened somewhere in my family. Like, he passed on. The uncle was given permission to be a principal in that regard. Unfortunately, some people managed to grab the system and they grabbed in a girlfriend to come and claim, and the money was paid to the girlfriend. When I made a follow-up, luckily I consulted with the ref. The girlfriend told me that she was given 35,000. But when you go to papers, we discovered that the ref paid the lawyers 11,000, and they also paid the hospital, I don't know how much, and the lady was given 75,000. And it means that the lawyer took the 40,000 plus 11,000. Simple. How are these people able to get this information? Ms. Honourable Member Felsman.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the department. This is still early days. It still has to be presented through the bill and so on. I would like to know, is it only by way of the fuel to collect or to get funding for RAPSA? I mean, general taking money or getting money from the toll gates and so on. Why fuel? I mean, did you look at other options as well, other commodities and so on? Secondly, is there any interaction or negotiations with the insurance companies? You know, like myself, I'm insured, say, maybe for Merlin, right? I do have a good medical scheme with liabilities, with all of that. And then I claim again from DAPSA. Is there any way to the distinction between the two of that? Secondly, the database is the heart of this thing. Is there any effort already in place, or are you working on it? When will the database be implemented? Without a database, the thing will definitely go the same way as the rest. Lastly, which is very, very, it's going to sound ridiculous, do we need this? Do we need RAPSA in this country? I mean, there are so many social grants and social this and that and free hospitals and so on. What leads to this? Thank you.
Thank you, Sammy. Please close your mic, please. Thank you. Honourable Member Jacobs.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. My question is, it's based on the funding. That one of the money taken out of a certain amount of money out of the liter of petrol. How is it being calculated? Is it being calculated on the previous consumption, or the estimation for the next year that so much fuel will be sold? And I just want to establish, maybe if we could be given how much per year normally in the past previous years was given to this fund, because if you look at the high consumption of fuel, I think it should have been the richest fund, because there's a high cost of people consuming petrol. The other one, on the issue of existing liability, does it mean in the past you could claim all this and put the money together and you would get that lump of sum? It's another issue that I want to know about that. The other one is this issue of road accident benefit scheme administrator that is envisaged. How is it going to operate? For instance, where is it going to be centered? Is it going to only be in Pretoria, or it will go to province, or go to regions, or go to municipalities? Because here we are talking about something which affects people nationally, not only in Pretoria. And also the access, because something, issues like of a funeral, it's something which has to be done immediately. And normally the insurance will say you'll get your money after 48 hours. And now, what will be the status of this? Because if you're talking about that, it means there must be a way in which it will be made simple and easily accessible. And also, if you say a funeral, would you be having funeral companies where you will make referrals to say, here is a funeral, can you assist this person, and so on? So I think we need that kind of a thing. The other issue is the question of this disability grant. For instance, we have a person who's been disabled. How does he apply for disability grant? Do you assist that person? Because you are aware this person is disabled, is no longer able to go into work, he needs a disability grant. So you are saying on your own, you'll do that on your own. But whereas you have the records, you could have the forms, help him or her to fill in the forms and be processed to Department of Social Development. Yeah, no, I think that's about all.
Honourable Matemba. Sorry, may you please switch it off, Mama Temba, before you, I wanted maybe to highlight some of the things which was raised by my colleague. You see, I'll put an example which is separate in terms of what you have raised, Baba Jacobs, that in access, whereas in a province or in the region, because our people are struggling. I'll put an example of the Home Affairs. Sometimes it's very difficult in some angles that you find a person is told to travel plus minus 300 to 500 kilometers sometimes. Let's say, for argument's sake, top between 200 to 300 kilometers. And during weekend, it was very difficult. What about this, where the offices are situated in Pretoria only? Okay, Mama Temba.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, let me also thank the presenter for the well-presented document. actually...
Sorry, Mama, let us protect you. I'm requesting anybody from our team to tell these people who are making noise. Members are coming. They're making 1, 2, 3. Anybody who can assist, they're at this site. Yes. Okay, Mama Temba.
Thank you, Chair. I also want to thank the presenter for the well-presented document. Actually, the way you put it, if maybe if you have a program, like you were saying, going to provinces, I think if maybe it can be also presented in the languages that the people will actually understand. Because these things are happening and people don't know exactly what is happening. For example, an old lady, where the old lady is remaining with the orphan of the daughter, deceased daughter or deceased son, in the rural areas. They all the time, after all the processes, being requested to come from, I'll make an example of Nkomas, in the rural area of Mpumala, going to Nelspruit. Every now and then, you know, that process is actually, I don't know whether it is good for that to happen or whether the people, the lawyers, in Nelspruit to go down to where these old people are, because they borrow money to get a taxi to the city, and then they are being given that little amount, maybe 1,000. From that 1,000, she is still going to take out. He or she is still going to take out money for going back and reimburse the person where she or he has borrowed to go there. So maybe if this policy, if this bill is income, should actually look at that these people, can there be centers in those areas where the victims are in the rural areas? And the other one is on the flat rate. Maybe if you can just elaborate to us, you know, flat rate, what do you mean? How is it going to be determined, the flat rate? How is the department going to determine what is the flat rate? And also to add on educating the public, maybe before even you start with the road shows, are you going to do road shows? The workshops? As we are 9 members of this select committee, maybe together with you, if during constituency period we arrange with you that you go to each province to go and educate people. We can, you know, educate people on this, because definitely I think people are actually not aware of what is going on. Like Honorable Mlenzana was saying, somebody called me. Myself also, I was called one time in Nelspruit that you were involved in an accident and you didn't claim. And I actually said to that person, who you are, you know, it was like, no, come, so that we sit down. I didn't go because I didn't see a need for me for claiming. And your process scorecard you have published for comments. Maybe if you can share with us through a written, you know, document on this comment, February 2010.
and then you revise to accommodate, you know, this process scorecard. So the legislative, because we are also, if you come with this legislation, we will have to go to provinces, to the legislature. Earlier I was talking about the public in the provinces, but now I'm talking about the portfolio committees in the legislature. Maybe if you can have a program together with us as reps from provinces to make a point that before even the legislation comes, then we go to the different legislatures, even if we are not the chairperson through you, but if they can, you know, instead of when the legislation comes, then we go just for today, we brief the committee, then come down, so that we make them aware that there is this legislation in the pipeline coming. Thank you, Chair.
Right, I'll put a nail with the following. You see, maybe if you can maybe tell us, give us confidence, in short, that, you know, in the past, the road accident fund was not only faced with the issue of challenges to overcome financial problems, but also it had a challenge of combating the fraud and corruption that was eating away the money. So, can you give us assurance that we have established something on that one? And then also, it was reported that it was not complying with the PFMA. Are you complying now? And then another challenge, which normally I used to ask, since you are working with millions of friends, do you have a risk management? Because the risk management is the one who's supposed to highlight, to sensitize you that be careful, be cautious, something is coming. As long as you don't have any risk management, you'll be facing problem. And who constitutes it? It's very much proper to know, for us to know that who constitutes it. And then somewhere else, like my colleagues have asked about issue of the fund, that who is it, the money coming from the fuel, whatever. You know, some time ago, because of most of problems or challenges within the REF itself, REF was they had challenges of backlogs. Have you able to address that? Are those people paid? Or what is happening? And then also, that the contributing factor in that regard was the insufficient of funding, and also the funding which are disappearing within the Yokofas. And what I wanted you to check whether. Are you equipped enough now to face those particular situation? Because there is a proverb or say which says charity begins at home. We can come up with a lot of legislation or whatever, and a lot of policies, but as long there are challenges within this institution, forget about any whatever. And then lastly, that issue of the lawyers, time and again, It's for you maybe to update us, because yes, I agree. Somewhere you hinted about the issue of that you were controlling that the fund must not go to the lawyers anymore, because lawyers, I remember during the early 204, lawyers were up in arms, challenging the fact that this fund must be paid through them, instead of being paid to the victim. So, what is the status quo at the moment? Because that's where there was a problem. That's why some of the people whom I've mentioned earlier on were even arrested for abuse, because it seems that some of the lawyers, they had a network. There was a network within the institution and some of the lawyers. I'll pause there. Thank you. I can give an opportunity to respond.
Thank you, Chair. I believe I thank you for the question, and I think we will have quite a number of clarity issues here. I think I must start with the lawyers. It's not only in 2002 and 3, but even recently, where the Road Accident Fund requested legislative change to provide them with a mandate to pay victims directly. And as the state law advisors and the legal gurus of the country advise the government to say, you cannot do that within the existing dispensation to pay the claimant. Because the way it works is that your claimants enter into an agreement with their lawyer. And that agreement, which is also part of the law of the country, stipulates that you do not need to pay me anything. I will do all of this for free. But when you get your money, I want so much. There's no law that can prevent them from entering into such an agreement. Now, if you pay the claimant directly, then he will not know what has been paid. So, to some extent, that will jeopardize and be seen as what they call then not only unconstitutional, but also a breach of contract. So there are a lot of legalese. Now, the RAS is not pursuing that. They want, within the existing dispensation still, they want to change the law so that we can pay claimants directly. The difficulty is, and talking to the NCLPS as legislators, we are going to present an act that will have direct pay. Do we want to simultaneously have an amendment act saying, well, also for those cases that may be between the one act and another act getting approved happen, you will also be able to do a direct payment. And even then it's going to constitutionally be a challenge. So to change the existing dispensation is already tricky because it's been advised that it's going to be unconstitutional. Plus, we are now going into a new piece of legislation, keeping in mind that you can't do anything with respect in any case. So if you're going forward, you want to correct this once and for all. But in principle, yes, it is quite a difficult thing. But to sensitize the NCLP for the extent that they may not be informed, the lawyers are not very fond of the Department of Transport, or the RA for that matter, supporting this policy change, because we are going to take away their jobs. And this is a big reality. And I'm sorry for all the good lawyers out there that are really playing a crucial role and supporting victims in a good way. Unfortunately, the mentioning already here, just in this room, of the number of fraudulent lawyers, corrupt lawyers that exist, and the networks that exist as a result of this dispensation, and they teaming up from the police station, from the very start of the accident, corrupting the whole process. We would like to request the NCLP support whenever we go into heavy debate. To keep this in mind, they will come with they will challenge every small detail in that bill on constitutionality. Not because of that, but because of the fact that this will eventually diminish their future prospects in their work, their own workplace. But just to go back now to the confidence point. It's true that in 2000 there were quite a number of irregularities within the actual administration, but I'm at liberty to say today that more than, well, let's say nearly a decade ago, we started that. We have had a very good executive team, and for the last, I think this will be the fifth year that they will have a clean audit report. So when we are talking about an insolvent entity on the one hand, it's because if all those claims that are backlogged would come up today, for some other reason, all the courts decide you must pay them today, they will not have to. That is why they are bankrupt. That's why we call them insolvent.
not because they don't have money, but because of this thing. But when it gets to the actual financial practices, the risk management, the internal controls that they've implemented, the fraud investigation units that they've been implementing and operating extremely successfully, I think to the extent that is possible in a public sector company with the constraints that they're experiencing, the kind of progress that they've made in this respect is really complementary. And even on the oversight side, from the portfolio committee side, when they considered the annual report, I think.
Protect us, Mama. Switch off your cell phone.
But I think we could definitely commend them. Chair, you mentioned it actually twice, the confidence that you need with regard to the financial progress that the RAF has made. And I feel quite safe today to say that the progress made is commendable from all the transport entities. The one that I can really rely on with regard to risk management, internal controls and general executive management would be RAF, more than any other including. So that does not always help though, because your constraints are much bigger and the kind of financial sustainability affects a range of strategic positioning efforts. For instance, I will jump a little bit to the question relating to placing of regional and other provincial offices. Of course, that is definitely part of the positioning of RAFSA. I think to take it to the people will be a responsibility of RAFSA, because you will not have the lawyers in. There will be no lawyer that will do all of that. So your positioning within your provinces, within your regions, not only urban but also specifically in your rural areas, will be absolutely critical. That will cost money. Now, the existing situation in the RAF is that they've already embarked upon a very intensive outreach program to ensure that they can take the road accident fund to the people. And the intention is to have people contact the RAF immediately. Because there's no rule that says you must have a lawyer. There's no such a rule. Act. If you're in an accident, you have the right to go directly to the RAF. It's just that if the RAF does not respond and you don't know what to do, it's just so easy to get a lawyer and they are just all over you. So that is part of the outreach program, to determine what processes they can assist with to take the entity to the people. But now, I need to mention this, because maybe somewhere along the line it will come to the agenda of the NCRP. I've mentioned that this will be costing money. And if you already have this delicate balancing effort that you must execute upon paying claims, dealing with your backlog, and then also progress into positioning yourself in the community, you need to have that kind of support from the system. And that should not necessarily, and that is my personal view, we will talk about the fuel levy, that should not necessarily come from the fuel levy, because that is part of your general service delivery program income. So to answer the question, yes, they have regional offices, the RAF now, regional offices, provincial offices, they have already embarked upon quite a number of pilots within hospitals, quite a number in KZN. I'm not quite 100% sure about the Eastern Cape, but they have embarked upon this outreach program to already be in the hospital so that the RAF can be approached while you're there. And that also goes for support of, for instance, persons with disabilities who will not be in a position to actually move around at the top. That again links up with another challenge, and I will need to be frank and mention that here today as well, because when we're going to deal with a bill, it will be part of the discussion. And that is the governance of that. Okay. We are having an entity called RIF, to settle all the claims within the fault system will take some time. But even if it takes 8 years, most claims do not take 8 years. I need to mention that. It's not all claims that take 8 years. Some can take 3 months or 2 months. But even if it takes 8 years, it's only 8 years, and it will be phased out. As you settle the claim, it's settled and it leaves the system. If we implement RAPSA, arguments take 1 January 2014. The implication is that from 1 January 2014, if you're in an accident from that day on, your claim will be dealt with according to the new system, in other words, by the new entity. If your claim has happened on the 31st of December 2013, it will fall within the fault system, in other words, RAPS will have to deal with it. So although RAPS will still or already be in place, dealing with the new claims coming in on a day-to-day basis, the old claims will still not be finalized yet. It will say a maximum of 8 years. It can be 18 for under age, for minors. But let's say 8 years. And it will close down. Now the question arises. Your workforce in the RAS, what kind of job security and threats to their job security will then come up? Because as a government, as a politician, that will be quite a debate. And unless you will be able to deploy them and absorb them into RAPSA, and keeping in mind they are mostly lawyers, and then it will be difficult, and we have a new focus, we need to sort this out. That is why I mentioned the business plan, the actual management plan, if I can simplify it, for RAPSA, and the transition plan that will have to be formulated. Not necessarily something for the bill, but on ground level, that will be the question that your community will ask, and that is what your RAF will raise. So as a result, one of the options that is to be embedded in the piece of legislation is to say, how will you construct this entity, RAPSA? Will you still include RAF as part of it and then let them deal with it so that it creates job security and you have a transitional phase over? Or will you have them totally different, which will put a lot of pressure on government to deal with the job security? Because on the one hand, you can't talk job creation and poverty alleviation, but then people lose their jobs in government. So those are challenges. Those are not that difficult to manage. The RAF has already embarked upon a transition plan and a business scorecard, how they would like to train people to become part of RAPSA and the new process. But I need to flag it, because those will be heavy debates at some point, and we need to make the right decision in our board when it be presented. Chair, I just want to take the questions maybe on Satchwell. On the foreigners, it has been a difficult one in the past because of foreigners entering the country, paying a fuel levy for a short period, and then getting all the benefits. That argument, that debate has not died. In fact, I will be entering discussions in SADC next week to discuss possibilities of agreements between at least our SADC countries to ensure that when we go overseas, that the kind of system that we participate in is not that much less than we provide our foreigners. So presently, they enter our country, they pay our fuel levy, and as a result, they get all the benefits. In the bill, we will have to cap this. We will have to, if we provide a service within social security, the emphasis is on South Africa. That is the emphasis. So at least, if we get to the point in our goal, it's not clear anymore. It's not clear to the extent that we give details. The Act will have to provide the details. If you're going to cap it,
and to the extent that you will prevent them from entering other forms of social security. There are possibilities of an insurance that they pay, like we pay when we go overseas, you pay insurance. You pay for your medical when you go overseas. We need to make that call. Yeah. It's just difficult, and the sensitization why we're so dramatic is that in other countries they do not have that. They have like the yellow card system, or they have a cash payment system. So it's very difficult to balance in an agreement between your, especially your neighboring countries. Overseas from Europe and Americas and Australia, those are easy. The difficult ones are with us in Africa. On the question from Honourable Member Groenewald, how to stop the abuse of the system, apart from the internal controls that I believe the RAF has already introduced, I think one of the other members also mentioned the fact that you need to have a very stringent, controlled environment of your stakeholders in the process, from where the very accident happened to the very last payment, through to your investigations, etc. Now, with your national investigation unit, we have a lot of support there. We have the internal audit forensic and other investigation unit within the RAF already being positioned to look into that. But to some extent, one of the very important ways to stop this, apart from the logical way, would be to ensure that your electronic system is flawless. Now, when I talk about an electronic system, the intention is, if you do direct payments, that when you're in the accident, when you're in the hospital, say, that you can immediately complete your form there, it gets onto the system, it can be monitored. There are all the other checks and balances existing within Home Affairs, maybe even within SASA, or the other payment points, with your police station's data, with RCMC, with your United, for instance. If you have a network of a controlled electronic environment, you can at least ensure that a certain percentage of fraud can be moved out of the way. That is your first trigger. And although the RAF has embarked upon a certain electronic system that is under investigation by the board whether it will be still suitable, but that would be a very important part, not only for the fraud then, but also for service delivery and enhancing the finalization of the process if we can have an absolutely transparent and safe system then. On the funeral benefit, the intention is not to have like a claim and pay for whatever expenses you have. The intention is to, when there is a death due to a motor vehicle accident and you've lodged your claim and you've proven that there is a death, that the amount, which is 10,000 decided by cabinet, for now we will debate it later, but that is the amount that has been decided for the policy at least, that amount be paid immediately, either to the spouse or the beneficiary or a friend, someone that will be taking care. In our bill we can make provisions on how the payment can be done and what kind of proof you must provide to make sure that you don't pay it just for anyone, that you pay it to a family or a spouse or a dependent. But the intention is not to provide any form of proof. The only proof you need is that there was a death due to an accident and the money will be paid. That links up to the other very important one, actually, on the advance and the risk of delayed payment. Now, this was also heavily debated, even on cabinet level. And it is something that we will have to address. We must just be careful how we're going to do it. Because what you want to prevent is that that because you are minimizing your controls, your checks and balances before you make the advance available, that you will take the risk
of not monitoring all the possibilities of fruit. So you need to, while the necessity is there to make an advance, we must be clear on how and what must be proven. But the intention is there to do it. The only way is to balance it with the risk and monitor it quite surely. And then on your punitive measure, and when we present the bill, it will be for the NCOC also to advise that if you would try to abuse the system, and it's getting abused, all social grants, the whole social security sector is a nightmare on foot because of this approach. We need to be very, very clear on the kind of criminal and punitive measures that must follow if at any stage you were found to be abusing the system. So in all, we need to do some advance. We must be clever how to do it, how to limit it, and make sure that in the operational management of it, it does not enlarge your risk. So your combating of your fraud versus sensitizing your need for that particular moment must be balanced. But I think there's definitely a way that we can address that, and the bill would be the right way. On the ring fencing, I think on my response on when the entity starts, if we, for instance, say the 1st of January 2014, and we start with our new entity, then we will know what is the backlog. When we hear 42 billion rand deficit, they could just as well say 100 billion rand deficit. It doesn't make a difference because it's not proven expenditure yet. Those are cases that are in process. It has not yet been determined. So it is like a forecasting of cases like this may amount to that. And Mr. Gar from the RAF, he knows that I'm very skeptical about that particular number of 42 billion rand. Because since 2008, we have a new act that capped those expenses. So in fact, it's not unlimited anymore. So since, and we've passed the 3 years, you must put in your claim not later than 3 years after your accident. So in fact, all the new claims should have been in now. They can't come, you can't bring a claim from before 2009 anymore. You can't. It's not legal to do it. So to some extent, you can be very clear on your actual deficit. But to answer on the ring fencing, in other words, on that particular day, we will determine the outstanding amount on the old RAF claim, and we will go and request a guarantee from Treasury so that when those claims get finalized, that the fiscus can pay them. The fiscus may not be happy to continue with this undertaking. I need to flag that to the committee as well. Although that was part of the discussion and the commitment, and I'm at liberty to say that because it's not a secret. The very factual situation may develop that the fiscus will come and say, no, but we can't bring things in. We can't just take money. We can't even pay ESCOM now. You want us to pay 42 billion rand to claims of the RAF. So those political decisions will exist at a later stage. And then we need to decide, so what then? Will we make it the burden of the RAF, of RAPSA? Will we utilize insurance companies to see to which extent they can buy the debt? So there are various options. Important one is we need a viable RAPSA going forward. The fuel levy in the draft policy document that went out for discussion, we had quite a number of options that we presented to Treasury. And the bottom line of all the consultations was that they decided they still wanted to keep the fuel. Now, within Treasury, they are also positioning tax differently presently to make it more sensible. There are other options. I would not mind if the NCOP would like to investigate that further, maybe on a political level. But for now, that is the decision that is going to be fueled. Honourable Member Southman, yes, I agree, database is the heart of this new dispensation. They have done quite a lot up to now. It still remains a challenge, though. It still remains. And the reason for that is that you have so many role players from the police station until the very end of the payment. So they are embarking upon a new management plan where they try to integrate all those role players and trying to get the data sorted. But it's not only data that you're talking about. You need to have clean data. And you need to have the kind of data that can be utilized for the purposes that they are for needed. Chair, just Honourable Member Baba Yaakob, the fuel levy calculation, it's quite difficult to determine the fuel levy for RAPSA at this particular point, but we've utilised the same funding model. That we have developed for the Road Accident Fund, and that funding model has also been utilized by Treasury. So we advise them, this is the system, it's a proper model that has been developed, what the increase in the fuel levy should be. But from Treasury's side, apart from it not being able to, from an affordability point of view, to give it to RAF, it's also a question that, coming back to why we must use the fuel levy. If you increase the fuel levy to the point that it actually covers the mandate, it may not be making economical sense. Because the moment you inflate the fuel levy, it inflates everything. So that is the critical point, the balance. Bringing that in maybe the importance of going to the going back to the debate again about the source of funding. On the program, on the languages, both of them, the department would love to go to the front, all properly, at any time. I'm personally available, I will make people available, we would like to engage with people from the province that are maybe within the specific language of the province and in the rural areas, and if you can have someone knowledgeable there as well, it will mark also the community involvement that you want, because at the end of the day you can put a RAF or a RAPSA person in the province and the region and even the district, but you need the involvement of the community. So to some extent the two can meet up, and I think I'm willing to present to the province even prior to the bill being introduced, but that will be quite soon. So if we can fast-track that at any point in time. So I'm not quite sure if I've missed anything. Maybe Mr. Gao, if you would like to add. So maybe if I've missed anyone's question.
Okay, I'll start by indicating that, okay, thanks for the response, but nevertheless, I've asked the question about the PFMA, whether do you comply now. Then also I've asked about the risk management, whether do you have that structure in place. And then also, Mr. Mlenzana, there was a thing which he raised I think, between Mr. Mlenzane and Honourable Member Jacobs about the issue of confidence within the institution, because people are getting information before you as a person, a victim, get everything. But people are informed. It means that there is a loophole somewhere there. The members, maybe they will add what they wanted to raise. Mr. Jacobs, I saw your hand was up.
Yeah, Chair. There's a question that I put forth on issues of liabilities, whether when a person pays all the claims, you can put them together. Maybe you can single them out from there, you put them together to make a larger claim. But also, on the issue of where will these offices be situated, I think I'm buying the idea of hospitals. But I was thinking, this is also linked to Department of Transport, Department of Home Affairs. We can't work in silos. If there is a need, any of those departments can make accommodation for this rent. So I think that's another way in which we can be able to that. But I'm also thinking on the abuse of the system. If we have those offices, there could be illegal claims and so on. I was also thinking maybe if we have a regional risk management officer who could also just check all the claims that are coming in to see if there is no abusive that is being made on the claims. I think those are some of the submissions that I want to make.
Honourable Member Mlenzana.
Chair, it's just a follow-up on that definition of a funeral. I had the response, but the response was more on justifying the amount than guiding, if one can say guiding as to what is it when you say it is a funeral. What is it that this money should be used for? I just wanted to pin that one down. Then lastly, Chair, I do not know, because what Mama Temba raised is very important, that if we have time, but with us, we are a team representing all provinces, if they can interact with your office and see how many from their side can be easily available, so that it's yourself who coordinates with the provincial pieces on the briefing on this policy. Thanks, Chair.
Honourable members, I agree, but I think we must summarize it so that we can have the next issues which are left. Yes, you can come.
Thank you, Chair. That's just for a question of interesting. I want to know if you know how many liters of petrol is selling per day in South Africa, because that is directly linked with you.
Yes, sir. Before I give it to you, I think it's those are the concerns which we raised. But what was also very much important, which we left, I'll use this opportunity. Always were told that some of the lawyers or firms were involved in corruption. But who are those firms? What happened with them? Because if we know, it's very easy for us to start something about them, those who are corrupt. Thank you very much, then.
Chief, thank you. On the compliance with the PFMI, the annual report of the RAF will be, I think they will also bring it to the NCRP. You don't get the annual report. The annual report has been tabled with the portfolio committee, and the 2011-2012 one is in process of being audited. You know, you go through the whole process in the financial year, etc. And according to the annual report, the RAF is complying to the PFMI.
So to answer that question. Similarly, they have put into place all the necessary risk management structures and processes as required by the necessary legislation. They are actually one of the entities that are very advanced in the implementation of King 3 as well. On the backlogs, the backlogs exist. It does exist. So within the compliance part and the risk management part, the actual payment of the backlogs and the way it is being managed are quite critical. The way they get the information from the lawyer side and other people, there's a very fine line between communication of information to your client and not communicating soon enough. It's a total different thing if someone else's society suddenly gets informed about your claim. Now, if there's a case like that, it should be reported, and there are very stringent legal measures that are being taken by the attorneys and the different compliance structures within them to take care, because that can't be done. You can't share confidential information on the client with anyone else but your client. So if that is happening, that is quite critical. The RAF does not give out any information. The RAF only communicates with the attorney or the client if requested. So if that is not happening, then the matter must be taken up to the department, because then we will oversee that the RAF is set straight. When we look at the offices, where the offices will be, hospitals, I agree, might be just a starting point, and we definitely could include not only home affairs, but you know, there's so many other social development offices already, and SASA offices, where social grants have been dealt with. So the whole net, the implementation plan, the operational plan, to get the act implemented will be critical, and I think then you will determine exactly where, how it's going to work, and how you will apply and utilize the community in there. I think I will have Mr. Gao deal with the funeral and the leaders of sexual assault.
Yes, Honourable Chair. My apologies, Chair. To answer Honourable Lenzana's question regarding the funeral portion and what is defined as a funeral, it's slightly technical answer, but under the current RAF Act, we have this old inherited legacy of you can only get an amount of money to bury the deceased or to cremate the deceased. And it's a whole, it has a long history coming with it, and there's certain things that are paid and certain things that are not paid depending on the old decisions of the court going back to the 1950s. So what we want to do in RABS is to say we don't want to define what a funeral is. We want to make the money available as soon as possible. And what we also want to do is it's an allowance. So we're not going to prescribe to you what the money must be spent for. It's a once-off allowance in cash to enable you to go and bury the deceased, and as far as possible we'll pay it to the closest family member, because those are the people that normally would be burying the deceased. So that's the idea. Dr. Du Toit did address the issue of the appropriateness of the amount, whether that should change, and I think that's something we can take up when the legislation comes to the NCOP. So, you know, that's basically how it works. I hope I've answered Honourable Mlenzana's question, Honourable Chair.
Thank you very much. The amount of petrol.
My apologies, Chair. Right, the amount of petrol, the RAF does have the figures for both diesel and petrol. Those go a very long technical route The money goes from the Central Energy Fund, and then it goes to SARS, and then SARS releases it to RAF. And then what happens is that RAF doesn't necessarily get the direct amount of diesel or fuel, doesn't get that levy automatically. What happens is some of the money goes into holding, and there are rebates for certain industries that consume diesel and petrol but do not use the road. So one of them would be Eskom, who generate fuel with diesel generators to make power for the grid. So they get a diesel rebate, so some of that money goes to them. And then as far as I'm aware, it's the maritime industry, which also uses a lot of diesel and boats. And they also then get a rebate back from the receiver on diesel purchased, Honourable Chair. But we can get the figures for Honourable Member Groenewald from the RAF if he so needs them.
Yeah, I think members, we are satisfied some of the responses, but we wanted to thank you once more to allow us this opportunity to get more clarity on the institution and also how is it funding people. But once more, nevertheless, you have explained the issue of foreign people. But I think we are a sovereign country. We're supposed to give direction on what we want in our country. We mustn't depend on other people, because some other people are taking advantages and taking chances in terms of our constitution, undermining it and doing all of this thing. Because if I can recall well, coincidentally, I was serving in NA in transport. There were a lot of cases. But since we started to talk about this, I think these cases are reduced. That exposes exactly that people were taking a right about this thing of a foreign cases happening in South Africa. What I'm saying in short is that we believe that we must have institutions and structures which must defend the poor people and the constitution of this country. We can't accept a structure which is given powers in terms of the constitution and in terms of the PFMA, but who are unable to discharge their performance. That is a shame and disgrace if that thing is happening. But we were very happy to hear that you are now complying with the PFMA. And also we were so happy to hear that you also do have structures like risk management, etc. But I can assure you that these members, they took note of some of these things. Next time, we'll ask with the very same question that how far you remember in such and such a day you gave us this and this and this. Without going any further, I'd like to thank you once more, and then so that you can allow us to continue with the next.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much. May I ask the House if we could be excused?
I think that is taken. No problem.
Thank you very much.
Members, let's go to the next. As I indicated earlier on, next one is the minutes. We'll look at the minutes of the 21st. But before we look to these minutes, once more, I'd like to...
Okay.
Yes.
I'm deliberately not putting this in. I think we have to develop a norm of what is it that involves other people and more.
All right. Okay, fine. We'll request that some people, maybe if you can allow them to maybe whatever, so that we continue with the next one. Mama Temba.
I was saying, sorry,
Ma, you didn't introduce yourself. That's why the members are asking.
will assume that we know.
I can't hear you.
My apologies to that to the chair for that. I missed my 6 o'clock flight. I come from the office of the director general and then held up in the media briefing in the GPF.
Okay, Sepi. Loli, may you please try and get these people to protect us, because they left, but they left their tape inside.
Mm-hmm.